to be remembered in life? You ever thought about that? I told someone the other day, I would love to sneak into my own funeral. Not so much to hear what they have to say about me in the funeral service. Because you know they're going to paint everything nice and flowery. But I'd like to step into the restroom with a couple guys talking, or into the foyer with some people talking, and just hear what they really have to say about me. How do you want to be remembered? I'll read you something that was in the August 7th newspaper in Pennsylvania. Will not mention her last name. Her name was Dolores. She was born in 1929 in New Mexico. This is an obituary. This was in the newspaper. Left us August the 7th, 2008. She will be met in the afterlife by her husband Raymond, her son Paul Jr., and daughter Ruby. She is survived by her daughters, Moretta, Mitzi, Stella, Beatrice, Virginia, and Ramona, her son Billy. And it lists all the grandchildren, all the great-grandchildren. I will not go into that, but listen. Listen to the turn that this obituary takes. Dolores had no hobbies, made no contribution to society, rarely shared a kind word or a deed in her life. I speak for the majority of her family when I say her presence will not be missed by many. Very few tears will be shed, and there will be no lamenting over her passing. Her family will remember Dolores, and amongst ourselves, we remember her in our own way, which were mostly sad and troubling times throughout the years. We may have some fond memories of her, and perhaps we will think of those times too. But I truly believe at the end of the day, all of us, and all is in capitals, all of us will really only miss what we never had. A good and kind mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. I hope she is finally at peace with herself. As for the rest of us left behind, I hope this is the beginning of a time of healing and learning to be a family again. There will be no service, no prayers, no closure for the family she spent a lifetime tearing apart. We cannot come together in the end to see to it that her grandchildren and great-grandchildren can say their goodbyes. So I say here for all of us, goodbye, Mom. What a tragedy. What a tragedy. How do you want to be remembered? Young people, I'm posing this question especially to you tonight. You may think you have a lot of time. You're young. You're energetic. You're active. But I'm going to tell you something. And I know I didn't believe it either when I was a teenager. But I'm going to tell you something. Time moves very quickly. Time moves very quickly. I used to run with the best of them. I could sprint. I could jog. I could play ball. My lands. I tie my shoelaces now. I get out of breath. Time has a way of just passing by so quickly. How do you want to be remembered? What do you want on the epitaph of your life, the tombstone of your life? How do you want to be remembered? God forbid that anyone here is remembered the way that Dolores lady was. Made no contribution to society. She'll not be missed. Never said a kind word. Never did a good deed, but she spent a life tearing apart her family. How do you want to be remembered? I want us to turn in the New Testament to the book of 1 Timothy chapter 6. Beginning with verse number 6. I'm not going to preach to you tonight. God has come, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that young man who minded God tonight. And I want him to know I'm going to be praying for you. I'm going to do my best to encourage you. So God has come tonight. I know it's late. But how many will give me 5 minutes? 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. Thank you. Thank you. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. I appreciate that. I just want to challenge you tonight and just talk out of my heart and share a personal experience out of my own life. Talk to you tonight about faithfulness, staying faithful, staying true. Now, before we look in our text, I've said this before, I mean it with all my heart, I'll say it tonight, that the validity of any revival is not seen in what takes place during that revival. It's seen in what takes place after the revival. Appreciate the young people who was a Friday night, stood around this altar and pledged their purity. Appreciate the young man who a few moments ago gave his heart to God. I'm not making light of that, but that to me does not prove we had a great revival. Oh, 30 kids around the altar pledging their purity. I'm going to go back and brag about... No. I'll tell you when I'm going to start bragging and is when 10, 15 years from now, you're still pure. You're still faithful to that pledge that you made. Even in your married life, you're still faithful. And I'm going to be encouraged when I see this young man, who knows when the next time, and ask him how his relationship is with God. And he'd say, Pastor Johnson, I haven't been the same since that night. That's when I'm going to be encouraged. Because he stayed faithful. Faithfulness. 1 Timothy chapter 6, beginning with verse number 6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into the world, and it is certain that we can carry nothing out. Having food and raiment, let us therewith be content, or let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And here's what I want you guys to grasp onto tonight. But thou, O man of God, thou, O young people, let me just put it in my words. You, young people, flee these things. Flee these things. Follow after righteousness and godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses. And then I want us to look at verse number 20. O Timothy, O young people, keep that which is committed to thy trust. Keep that which is committed to thy trust. I want to talk to you tonight, I've mentioned it, but about faithfulness. Staying faithful. And staying true. In the midst of a difficult world, in the midst of a world that is no friend to you and no friend to grace, young people, my challenge to you tonight is to stay faithful. Stay faithful. I just want to quickly go through some of these main points before I get to the main thing I want to share with you tonight. So just hang on, because we're zooming through this rather quickly for the sake of time. How can we be faithful? Well, thankfully, it's right here in our text. First of all, we stay faithful. We remain faithful by fleeing. And I talked to you about leaving and the other night about fleeing some things, fleeing sexual immorality. But here again, in this passage, it's a theme of Paul. Flee these things. Flee these things. Now, what's he talking about? What's these things? Well, I talked to you about the love of money. And in chapter 6... verse number 1 through verse number 7 talks about contention and conceit and covetousness. Those are the things that we need to flee. Flee conceit. Flee spiritual pride. Flee conceit. Flee contention. Verse 5 talks about those that love to argue. Flee those things. The love of controversy. And then he talks in verses 6 through 10, the love of money, covetousness. Young people, flee those things. Flee those things. Flee sexual immorality. Flee covetousness. Just turn your back on those things. And I know I'm repeating myself because it's a theme that I've hammered this week. But young people, one aspect of staying faithful is for you to flee the things of this world. Turn your back on them. But the second aspect here is not only are we to flee these things, but we are to follow something as well. So flee and follow. And I'm so glad that in the Word of God, it's not all negative. Ah, flee, flee, flee. But there's some positive. Follow. 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 What are we to follow? Oh, I love it. Follow after righteousness. Righteousness deals with our character. Character is the raw living of life out of which we either by diligence consist a temple or by negligence create a trash heap. Character, young people, is what you are when no one is looking. Character is doing right when it hurts you to do so. The Bible talks about swearing to your own hurt. Character is Joseph saying no to Potiphar's wife and going to prison for being honest and pure. Character is Moses giving up the perks of an Egyptian prince for the perils of a Jewish prophet. For 40 years, sacrificially serving a people who did not deserve his leadership. Character is Paul saying, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." Character is Jim Elliot, the martyr, writing in his journal, "He is no fool to give what he cannot keep, to gain what he cannot lose." Young people, follow after righteousness, right living. Follow after character. Character is what you are in the dark. Character is what you are when no one's around. Character is what you are when no one else is there. You're all by yourself. You show character. Follow after righteousness. Follow after godliness. Godliness deals with our conduct, and our conduct is always directly affected by our character. Follow after faith. He goes on and talks about following after faith. And God's Word calls us to walk by faith because godliness is derived from living by faith. To trust and to depend and to lean on God for all of life. God desires that we pursue a life of faith. Follow after love. The mark of a true Christian is that he is a loving person. Say, "Oh, that's easy. I love those who love me." No, no, it's not. It's far more than just loving those that love you. It's loving those who hate you, who despitefully use you. Paul said in Romans 13, "Owe no man anything but to love one another." 1 Timothy says, "The end of our endeavor is to love out of a pure heart and faith unfeigned." This is the mark, the sign that we've been touched by the Spirit of God, is that we have become loving people. And this loving is horizontal and it's vertical. The vertical aspect is that we love God. The horizontal aspect is that we love each other. We love God. We love each other. We need to also follow after patience. I wish I could skip over that because I'm not a very patient person. Yesterday I went to fill up for my trip home today. In that marathon, there was six or seven cars in front of me. And I drove to Ligoti to get my gas rather than get behind someone and wait. You know, at least I'm moving on my way to Ligoti. And it wasn't a total loss. I went to Dairy Master, got a hamburger. So, you know, it was a pretty good deal after all. But I don't have any patience. I think that's why God's put me in Frankfort, Indiana, the home of the slowest moving trains you've ever seen. You know, one of my prayer for patience is, "Lord, give me patience, but please hurry." That's my prayer of patience. But it's more than just patience. The Amplified Version translates this passage as steadfastness. Or the New American talks about perseverance. In other words, no matter how tough it gets, hang in there. Persevere. Be steadfast. Be patient. Follow after meekness, he says. Or gentleness. And oh, I just want to encourage you young people that your speech be seasoned with gentleness. Oh, we live in such a rough world. Just rough word and rough, rough. Be gentle. Be gentle. So we are to what? We are to flee. We are to follow. But we're also to fight. Look at verse 12. Fight the good fight of faith. Fight. You know, if you want to remain faithful, in the Christian life, there is no room for passive, go-with-the-flow people. The Christian life is one of contending and fighting. Matter of fact, the Greek word here for fight is where we get the English word agonize. It's such a fight that we agonize in this fight. Yet many in the church are not fighting the fight of faith. They're sitting idly by. I just remind you what the songwriter said, "Must I be carried to the skies on flowery beds of ease, while others sought to win the prize and sail through bloody seas? Sure, I must fight if I would reign. Increase my courage, Lord. I'll bear the toil, endure the pain, supported by thy word." You're going to have to fight impurity. You're going to have to fight laziness. You're going to have to fight greed. You're going to have to fight worldliness. You're going to have to fight prayerlessness. You're going to have to fight temptation. But when you do all these things, God will help you stay faithful. And that's what I want to talk to you about tonight. Give me about 10 minutes, And I want to close with this thought on being faithful. In verse 14, he talks about that you keep this commandment without spot. And then in verse 20, he says, "Oh, Timothy, keep that which is committed. This is a sacred trust, keeping that which has been committed to you." Young people, that which you've received in your Christian life, the peace, the joy, the grace of God, keep that. How do you keep that? You keep that by being faithful and true and steadfast. Because true faith shows up in faithfulness. Not everyone can preach. You've discovered that this week. Not everyone can sing. You discovered that 10 minutes ago. But every one of us can be faithful. Every one of us can be faithful. How long are we to flee, fight, follow, and stay faithful? Paul gives us the answer here in this verse in short form, until our Lord Jesus Christ's appearing. And by the way, I was referring about me, not the choir. Stay faithful. Stay faithful. Brother Ziegler, it's hard for me to say Ziegler too, by the way. Brother Ziegler, Reverend Pastor Ziegler, you remember Brother Gale in homiletics class. He'd always tell us, "Boys, be faithful. Be faithful." It's encouraging. Be faithful. Be faithful. I gave my heart to Jesus Christ 20 years ago, June the 20th, 1988. Your pastor and his wife were probably there. Pilgrim Holiness Camp Meeting in Anderson, Indiana. I had all that I could take. I was under so much conviction. It was the first, it was the Monday of camp. Sunday night, I literally ran out of the tabernacle under so much conviction. Sinner friends followed me out, begging me to go pray. That's how under I was. I refused. But all day Monday, all Sunday night, I was just miserable. And Monday night, during the prelude to the pre-service, and all I could take, I stepped out, and I made my way to an altar of prayer. And on my way to the altar, the devil jumped on my back, and he said, "Travis Johnson, if you go pray, you're going to lose every friend that you have." Yeah, I was sitting with a group, about 10 or 11 of my friends. He said, "If you go pray, you're going to lose every friend that you have." I remember turning around to see what they were doing. 8 of them were following me to the altar. And so I got a good lesson right then and there. The devil's a liar, and he's still a liar. I remember praying through. I made 2 restitutions that night. The first one I made was to my grandpa. He had taken me hunting here in Shoals when I was about 11 years old. John, over by your grandpa's place, Buzzard's Roost was the name of the place that Papaw called it. And we went deer hunting. And he set me down, and my brother went off, and I was sitting there for about an hour or two with that gun. I was bored half out of my mind. Every leaf falling I thought was a deer. I was, I was bored to death. And I got to playing with the safety. It's not a good thing to do. And then I forgot, okay, now what does red mean? Is that off or on? Is it off? I think it's off. So I pulled the trigger. Boom! I did it twice that week, or that was 3-day hunting trip. And both times I told Papaw, "I saw a deer was big. I missed it, sorry." I lied to him. So the first restitution I made was on my knees to my Papaw. I said, "Papaw, I lied about those deer." And then the second restitution I ever made was to your mom, Sister Leach. See, I'd been punching holes in the dorm through the drywall. Some guys tried it, but they hit the studs. But I was smart in that. I knew where to hit. And I was just punching holes and causing a lot of damage. It was a lot of fun. And Sister Leach, I don't know why I confessed to her, but I did. I said, "How much do I owe you?" And she said, "You don't have to pay me anything. I'm saying, thank the Lord. Hallelujah. I don't have to pay anything." You know what? When God changed me that day, I mean, he absolutely changed my life. You guys, I'm ashamed to admit it, but I was on drugs. Just 15. I was already involved in drugs and alcohol. My goal in life was to sing rock and roll music. I was involved in heavy metal music, is what it was called back in those days. Matter of fact, I was already singing in a rock band. We'd practice on Sundays. Oh, we wanted to be big and tour the world and sing rock and roll. But Jesus changed me so completely. So completely. And I remember I was so excited about being saved, I started telling everybody. Everybody. "Hey, I want to tell you what God's done for me. I was telling my friends in public school, listen, you know, I can't run with you anymore. I called the guys in the band, listen, I can't do this anymore. God has saved me. It's changed my life. I didn't have to worry about losing friends or dropping friends because they dropped me. But God gave me a whole lot better friends, let me tell you. Oh, I remember telling everybody. One person in this world I was scared to death to tell. It's not because I was ashamed of being a Christian. But I'll just be honest with you, I was terrified of my father. My parents divorced when I was a young person, just 5 or 6 years old. And you know what? You always want your dad's approval. You always do. To this day, I crave my dad's approval. I'm 35 years old, and I act like I'm 5 around him still. So I want him to be pleased with me. And I knew that if I was a Christian, I would not have my dad's approval. You see, my dad hated the church, hated preachers, hated anything to do with God. But I knew I had to tell him. I knew I had to tell him. Late in the summer, I got to see my dad 2 weeks out of the year every summer. So late in the summer, I made my way to Frankfurt where my dad was living. And I was a nervous wreck. Spent a couple nights there. Thought, when am I going to tell him? When am I going to tell him? I would read my Bible in my bedroom and hide it from him because I didn't want him to know. But I knew I had to tell him. And by that time, I'd already made a decision to go to Bible school because I knew I could. With my weaknesses, I knew I couldn't live a Christian life in public school. And so I'd already been accepted by Union Bible Academy to finish my high school years there. So I needed to tell Dad that. I needed to tell Dad what God had done for me that summer. And we were getting ready to go fishing. Just a few miles outside of Frankfurt, there's a little town called Colfax. We got a nice pond out there Dad would take us to when we were kids. My Uncle Mark, my dad's brother, was with us. And I thought, well, this might be a good time. Got a little buffer here with Mark, and might be a good time. And so before we left to get in the truck to head out fishing, I said, Dad, I want to tell you something. He said, all right, son. I said, Dad, I just want to tell you that this summer at camp I got saved. And I'm going to Bible school in a few weeks. I'll never forget the rage, the anger on his face. He balled up his fist and took a step towards me. My uncle stepped in between him. I'm glad I had that buffer. I was scared to death. If Mark hadn't have been there, I think my dad would have hit me. And he began to curse God. He began to curse me. He began to curse the church. And we loaded up in the truck and we headed out on West Barner Street out of town towards Colfax. And we passed the Bible hole in his church. And he began to point at that church and curse it and curse the people. Little did I know that some years later I would be associate pastor at that very church that he cursed. From that moment on, my relationship with Dad was very strained, to say the least. I wanted his approval. I just wanted Dad to look at me and tell me he was proud of me. But Dad had never told me that in my life. I just wanted to be proud of me. That's all I wanted. He didn't have to agree with me, didn't have to accept what I've done, but just proud of me, son. It's all right. Didn't happen. Going off to Bible school, going to Frankfurt at times to visit, was very difficult. I remember going to the Maoris long before I even ever dated Jody, and the Maoris had me over for a meal. And I'd say, listen, after dinner, I'd say, listen, I'm going to go see Dad. I want you guys to pray with me. I'll never forget, time after time, Brother Maori and his family would gather around me and pray for me because I was such a nervous wreck, literally sick to my stomach. And I go see Dad. It was very strained, very strained. Years went by. I'm older now. I'm married. Dad had finally got a little used to the idea, but still very strained relationship. Just not what it should be between a father and son. Went off to pastor. Went off to pastor. Didn't see Dad a whole lot. But I did my best to stay faithful. To stay true. There's been plenty of opportunities for me to turn my back on God. There's been many opportunities for me to violate my wife's trust in me. Not that I was looking for opportunities, but there's been opportunities. no. No to this world. No to the things of this world. I stayed faithful. You understand what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying? I moved back to Frankfurt to become a youth pastor, associate pastor at that church. I'd visit Dad. I noticed things are a little different. It's not as cold as he was. I think things are working here. I went to visit my great-grandmother, my Grandma Johnson's mom. She died when she was 97. I just went to Illinois to visit her. I knew that she was low and wasn't going to last long. And I just happened to be there when she died. Just went to visit, and she died while I was there. And my grandmother and my great-aunts were there, and they said, "Travis, will you preach the funeral?" I said, "I can't. I can't. Dad'll be there. He's never heard me preach. Please, Travis, preach the funeral." I take that back. I did preach a funeral of my grandpa's, so Dad had heard me one time. But never said a word to me after the funeral. Never said a word about anything. So I preached my great-grandma's funeral. And I got done. I went to stand beside the casket like good pastors and preachers are supposed to do. My family was coming through. I'll never forget my dad. He came and he looked at his grandma, my great-grandma. And then he looked at me. I was 29 years old. And for the first time in my life, I heard these words, "Son, I'm proud of you. Son, I'm proud of you." I lost it. People probably thought I was crying over Grandma T, but I wasn't crying over Grandma Thurman. I was crying because for the first time in my life, my dad looked me in the eyes and he shook my hand and he said, "Son, I'm proud of you." I'm not bragging on me. I've had plenty of failures. I've had plenty of in life I've stumbled, but Dad doesn't know that. And it dawned on me right then and there that I'm the closest thing to Jesus Christ my dad knows. What would have happened if I would have strayed from the path, if I would have been unfaithful? What would have happened if I would have given into that little temptation? What would have happened if I would have cut the corner here or done something here that I shouldn't have done? I would have never heard those words, "Son, I'm proud of you," because Dad would have been disappointed. I'm just telling you guys, it pays to stay faithful. It pays to stay true and walk with Jesus. I don't know what's going to happen, but I have faith and I believe with all my heart that my dad is going to give his heart to Jesus Christ one of these days. But it's not going to be in a church, I don't think. It's not going to be after a verse or two of "Just as I am." I don't think so. I think he's going to call the only person he knows that is like Jesus. He's going to call me. He's going to say, "Son, I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you about your faith, your religion." I think that's how it's going to happen. And so that challenges me to stay faithful, to stay true, no matter what. Young people, I had a good time with you this week. Enjoyed playing volleyball with you. I played one game. That's all I could do. I've had fun. I want you to know that. It's been nice to get to know you guys. And you've laughed at my jokes. You've rolled your eyes at my jokes. You haven't gotten my jokes. It's been great to be with you. It really has. I'm going to tell you something. I want you guys to stay true. I want you to stay faithful. Young man, no matter what, stay faithful. I'm going to tell you something. If Travis Johnson can make it, anybody can. Anybody can. Stay true. Stay faithful. Keep that which has been committed to your trust. Let's stand together.